and nobody knows what it means to accomplish peace through strength better than President right. Trump. He is the one who came up with that motto.
I don't think that's actually correct, Caroline.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Certainly ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another all-too-thrilling edition of The Bradcast. We have had Desi Doyen, hello.
Hi.
We have had fire hose news days before in the Trump era.
Yes.
But I gotta say, this may be the fire hosiest of fire hose news days that we've ever come across. So we will get to what we get to today. Forgive us.
If we miss anything.
Or what we don't get to. Yeah. Well, we're going to miss a lot.
Yeah.
Because we kind of got to pick and choose here.
Yeah, no kidding.
First, I just need to start here because it underscores what a bunch of freaking amateurs and idiots that we now have in control of the U.S. government. You heard a little bit at the top there, but that was 27-year-old White House press secretary Carolyn Leavitt on Fox News on Monday, informing Fox News and its viewers, and I put the word informing in quotes, informing Fox News that Donald Trump is the one who came up with the motto, peace through strength.
And nobody knows what it means to accomplish peace through strength better than President right. Trump. He is the one who came up with that motto and that foreign policy doctrine, and he successfully implemented it in his first term. And this is one of many steps he is taking to successfully implement peace in his second term.
Okay.
In
fact, according to an easy, very easy fact check, it turns out it was not actually Donald Trump who came up with that motto, peace through strength.
What?
As I suspect pretty much everyone listening to the sound of my voice knows, even if they may or may not know it if they heard her on Fox News. But it probably wasn't actually who you think it was either. In fact, as it turns out, that phrase, peace through strength, was first notably used by Roman Emperor Hadrian.
Oh, wow.
But it was popularized in U.S. politics by George Washington.
Aha.
And then 1964 Republican presidential candidate Barry Goldwater before it was perhaps became most famously used by, yes, Ronald Reagan. In fact, it's actually the motto of the USS Ronald Reagan, a Nimitz-class nuclear-powered aircraft carrier in the U.S. Navy. That's the, I guess, the only actual use of that as an official motto is by the ship USS Ronald Reagan. But hey, sure, Press Secretary Barbie, you were close. You only missed it by a few thousand years or so, I guess. Now, I say that not to make fun of Carolyn Leavitt, though I'm happy to do that as well, but I mention it to underscore what kind of a jackass loser that we have at the top of our executive branch who would appoint, who thinks so little of the United States of America and its free press, that he would appoint a know-nothing 27-year-old kid with unabashed lying skills, I'll give her that, and a willingness to believe, I guess, that the world began on the day that she became White House press secretary. To appoint her to one of the most important jobs in the government, frankly, and how it demonstrates how little Donald Trump actually cares about the well-being of this nation, much less the critical free press that helps us stand apart from much of the rest of the world. And yes, a free press that is still here, like it or not, to report on all of this idiocy, at least for now. Levitt was on Fox trumpeting Trump's unlawful, unconstitutional, and hypocritical, especially for a guy who pretends to be anti-war, attack on three nuclear sites in Iran over the past weekend, which Trump claimed to have been, quote, totally and completely obliterated by the U.S. attacks. Kind of the way he invented the motto peace through strength, I guess.
Very similar.
As it turns out, funny thing, as reported by the New York Times within the past hour or so, and a bunch of other media outlets have now jumped in, the Times reports, quote, a preliminary classified U.S. report says the American bombing of Iran's nuclear sites sealed off the entrances to two of the facilities, but did not collapse their underground buildings, that according to officials familiar with the findings in this classified report. The early findings conclude that the strikes over the weekend set back Iran's nuclear program by only a few months, according to the officials. Setting it back by only a few months, unless I'm mistaken, that is not the same as completely and totally obliterated it, as Trump lied to the nation about those attacks on Saturday night after our unlawful, unconstitutional, unprovoked military attacks on a Mideastern nation using false claims about WMD for cover in doing so. Sound familiar? But sure, Trump is the anti-war president. He's against forever wars, et cetera, BS, BS, ad nauseum. But perhaps that's why Donald Trump was in a cranky mood on Tuesday morning on his way to The Hague for a NATO summit. You'll recall the breaking news during yesterday's broadcast that Trump had announced on his social media site a ceasefire between Israel and Iran. It was, as we noted, as it came in, this sort of a sort of cryptic. It suggested that this ceasefire would take place in 6 hours or in 12 hours, or in 24 hours. It was unclear, to say the least. And as the night wore on after we got off air, one Iranian official, hours later, finally said something about this supposed ceasefire, that they had accepted this ceasefire offer from the United States, but Israel had still not said anything, at least as of midnight or so on L.A. time on Monday night. But by daylight today, it looks like the ceasefire that may or may not have existed pretty much seems to have never existed or has completely fallen apart, as both Israel and Iran had traded missile volleys throughout the night. Turns out Trump just saying something on his failing social media site doesn't necessarily will it to be true. Who knew? At least on the international stage, where wars are not supposed to be happening at all when Donald Trump is in charge. So yeah, I guess he was a little bit grumpy on Tuesday as he was leaving to go to the NATO summit in Europe. And he had a bit of a, at times, cryptic and profane tantrum for the gathered press there in what the right-wing Drudge Report cited as Trump going, quote, absolutely berserk. Linking to Mediaite's coverage of this, which reported President Donald Trump issued a blunt warning to Israel on Tuesday to, quote, not bomb Iran, as he departed for the NATO summit in The Hague. Speaking to reporters before takeoff, the president said that both Israel and Iran had breached the terms of the truce. I guess it was his truce, and made clear that he was, quote, not pleased with Israel's promise to launch retaliatory airstrikes, according to Trump, agreeing to the deal. Asked by a reporter about whether Iran had violated the ceasefire, Trump replied, they, quote, violated, but Israel violated too.
They violated, but Israel violated it too.
Are you questioning if
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I'd never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
Yes, I think we understand that, Mr. President.
Yeah.
Or we at least understand your belief, your understanding of it. In a further post on Truth Social, just moments later, he wrote in all caps, Israel, do not drop those bombs. If you do it, it is a major violation. Bring your pilots home now. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States.
Good Lord.
No kidding. Who does this guy think he is? I know that he thinks he's king of the United States, but apparently he also thinks he's the dictator of the world.
Respect my authority.
The comments come as the Israeli military vowed to carry out, quote, intense retaliatory strikes on Tehran following ballistic missile attacks from Iran that struck Beersheba in Israel on Tuesday morning, killing at least four civilians. In response, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz ordered a, quote, forceful counteroffensive targeting what he described as, quote, the heart of Tehran. Tehran denied any role, by the way, in the attacks on Beersheba. Iranian state media claimed that, quote, reports published about missile launches from Iran toward the occupied territories after imposing a ceasefire on the Zionist regime are denied. They said, accusing Israel of fabricating the provocation. The ceasefire agreement announced late Monday by Trump from Palm Beach was meant to phase out hostilities within 24 hours. So far, anyway, it looks like that is another fail, along with our own attack on Iran being a fail as well. More on King Trump's brutal oppression here at home in a little bit. Also, Desi Doyen's latest Green News report.
Yes.
As the first brutal climate change intensified heat wave of the summer is now broiling, I think, more than half of the United States. It's
yes.
Fair to say.
Yes, it's a lot of people.
Now,
it's really hot.
Former 30-year Weather Channel meteorologist, occasional guest, and longtime friend of the broadcast has been covering the heat wave at his guyonclimate.com website, where he tracks weather and climate records, heat records, and so forth amid our quickly worsening climate crisis. And while many of you in the eastern part of the country already know this, a big humid heat dome is sitting over much of the country this week in what Guy describes as heat wave shell. As he has been naming these heat systems after oil companies for some time, the way they name hurricanes, and then the Weather Channel decided to start naming winter storms. Well, Guy Walton thinks it's a good idea, and I agree with him that he names heat waves after the oil companies that, as he noted to me again this morning via email, quote, because the burning of their product enhances these heat waves. He says that, a quote, looks like the big heat dome over the east will be at its zenith on Tuesday and then start to collapse thereafter. Most of the east coast south of New England will remain, however, at dangerously hot levels throughout the end of this week. He says it looks like Philadelphia will be one of the worst cities since they had a record of 99 degrees Fahrenheit on Monday with the top heat index. That's the combination of heat and humidity, I
yes.
think. How it makes
how it
that
feels.
Feel. That combination brought it up in Philly to 109 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yikes.
On Monday, the feels like. And then 101 degrees, the regular temperature on Tuesday, tapering off a little bit as we get midweek. He says, as usual, homeless people will suffer the most in these type of heat waves, though it is clearly not only Philadelphia and not even only the eastern seaboard right now, but throughout the Midwest and in the South as well, thanks to, yes, heat wave shell. So be careful about that.
Yes, indeed. And please check in on any seniors or other vulnerable people in your life, your neighbors, friends, family, and their pets who may be living independently during this heat wave. Yeah. And just make sure that they're okay, because extreme heat for these folks is extremely dangerous.
Indeed. And more on that and many other topics of alarm in Desi's Green News Report a little bit later this hour. But it's also primary election day on Tuesday in New York City, where temperatures reached a steamy 100 degrees on Tuesday. By the way, that is nearly 20 degrees above the average for New York City. So I'm hoping the lines for voting in the Democratic primary are not too long and too hot today, but it's a very interesting election on a whole bunch of levels. One, simply the politics in the very Democratic New York City. Normally the winner of the Democratic primary is almost guaranteed to go on to become the mayor. That still may turn out to be the case, but there are a whole bunch of caveats around the race this year, including Tuesday's primary this week. Current mayor Eric Adams, previously a Democrat, but wildly unpopular after his corruption became fully known. He had been taking expensive gifts from the nation of Turkey, for example, for years in exchange for favors, which he was indicted for by the Biden administration, only to see those charges corruptly dropped by the Trump administration's DOJ after Adams had begun cozying up with Donald Trump. But nonetheless, he's not in prison. He's instead running for re-election, despite those now dropped criminal indictments, but he will be running as an independent in November, so he is not on Tuesday's Democratic primary ballot. Meanwhile, there are 11 Democrats running in the primary on Tuesday, with its front runner believed to be the disgraced former New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo, who, if you believe the polls, is either closely trailed or perhaps even losing to progressive Democratic socialist Zorin Mamdani. And polling in third place is progressive current New York City comptroller Brad Lander, who you may recall last week was roughed up and arrested at the federal courthouse building in Manhattan by Trump's ICE thugs as he was attempting to escort a migrant out of the building after a court hearing, as Lander has been doing for several weeks amid Donald Trump's assault on the nation's migrants. Mamdani and Lander, both progressives, they've cross-endorsed each other. Why? Well, because it's a ranked choice voting election, and they believe that if their supporters rank them on the ballot, number one and number two, that will constitute a majority of voters, and that will somehow push former Governor Cuomo out of the running, even as Cuomo has suggested that he might run as an independent as well if he loses Tuesday's Democratic primary. Got it? So a lot. And that, by the way, that doesn't even include the Republican running this November, Curtis Sliwa, the former founder of the Guardian Angels in New York City. He's running as the Republican candidate. And with all of this happening, who knows what's going to happen in November? But speaking to Tuesday's results, where, as I say, there's a lot riding, if we're able to figure out those results, as longtime listeners of the Bradcast and readers of bradblog.com know, I'm not a particular fan of ranked choice voting for a number of reasons. I support the reasons behind it. It's more egalitarian in many ways than regular so-called first past the post voting, where the person with the most votes wins, end of story. And while it can result in less divisive elections, because you may need the support of your opponent's voters if you are knocked out or if they are knocked out in early rounds of counting, it's very difficult for the public to oversee and understand how it's tallied during the counting procedures, many rounds of them potentially. It requires computer tabulators to tally results in a central location, which means you can't hand count, much less hand count at the precincts. Where counting at the precincts, whether it's by hand or by computer, makes it harder to game results. And there are other reasons as well. Also, many voters and even candidates who have participated in RCV elections don't understand how it works after it's all said and done. After they lost an election, they may not understand why. Our friend Marilyn Marks, who you've heard many times on this program, election integrity champion and transparency champion, she once ran for mayor of Aspen in Colorado under a ranked choice voting election. She could not make sense of her own election and why it exactly was that she lost. Anyway, that's just a few of the reasons that many of the places that have tried ranked choice voting or RCV have eventually abandoned it later. So my short, if a little bit snarky response in general when I'm asked, Brad, what do you think about ranked choice voting? I generally say, well, if you think we have trouble in this country simply adding 1 + 1 + 1 in our elections and having confidence in those elections and the way they were counted, well, just try adding the ridiculously complicated math that's required for RCV, and it is a potential recipe for disaster, at least as I see it. So for those not familiar with RCV elections, I'll try to explain it very quickly. Apologies in advance that it's complicated, even when I'm trying to be simple about it. In the first round of counting, if nobody receives, no candidate receives a majority of first place votes, because everyone is ranked, when you vote, you rank them, in this case, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the way you prefer them to be chosen. So if in the first round nobody receives a majority of first place votes, then the last place finisher, their ballots are removed, or at least they are removed, and the second place votes on his or her ballots are then redistributed to the other candidates who are still in the race. They redistribute those votes that are marked 2 on those ballots. All ballots are then tallied again, and if nobody still has a majority, then the one with the fewest votes is eliminated, and their voters' votes get redistributed, and there's another round of counting and so forth. Yes, it is as complicated as it sounds, and as difficult for the public to oversee as it sounds to make sure that they know who the winner is in an election and know why their candidate may have lost so that we can have confidence in our democracy.
It sounds like a recount would be a real nightmare.
A recount? There ain't going to be no recounts at the end of this. I mean, once they come up with a winner, that's it. Unless, of course, someone challenges the ballots and then...
Yeah.
Good luck.
Oh, my.
So, underscoring that, then, is this report from NBC News today on the ballots that New Yorkers are actually wrestling with in this important, very important election, which is the second time that New York City has used rank choice rules, enabling voters to rank up to 5 preferred candidates gives them an extra degree of input in a primary, but it also requires rank choice ballots to be more complicated. Well, there's your warning sign right there, eh? In a typical non-ranked choice election, candidates have single buttons or bubbles next to their name on the ballot. In a ranked choice election, voters need the ability to select candidates as their first, second, third, etc. choices. On New York's Democratic mayoral ballot this year, that translates into 60 bubbles spread across 12 rows and 5 columns. You're beginning to understand my concerns here? The grid style of ballot is more complex than a non-ranked one, adding new ways for voters to mismark or mistakenly fill out their ballots. The rate of rejected ballots tends to be about 10 times more often than in regular non-ranked races that appear on the very same ballot, that according to peer-reviewed research. Voters can mistakenly select the same candidate for multiple rankings called overranking. Example, if they mark John Smith as their number one, two, and three choice, they can select candidates for their first choices, leave the column blank for their second choices, and select other candidates as their third choices, which is called skipping, which can, in some cases, disqualify a ballot. Or they can select multiple candidates as their first choices. For example, it's called overvoting, where you choose several different candidates as your number one candidate. Now, on a non-ranked choice ballot, only overvoting would disqualify your ballot. But by analyzing over 3 million digital ballot records from over 150 ranked choice races in New York City, San Francisco, which also does this, Alaska, and Maine, which does this now, the research shows that in a typical ranked choice race, almost 5% of voters mismark their ballots in at least one way. And not all of those mismarks, by the way, will disqualify a ballot. Depending on the rules in each particular jurisdiction and the type of mistakes that that one makes. For example, if you choose the same candidate as number one, two, and three, and she wins in the first round, well, you're good. But if your candidate is tossed out in the first round, they won't be returned for the second round of voting, so your second place vote is essentially wasted. Man, that's just one example. There's some examples of how ranked choice voting can result in lost votes. New York City used ranked choice voting for its elections for mayor and other local offices back in 2021, as well as for city council races in 21 and 23. Averaging across those races, the analysis finds about 6.1% of New York City voters mismarked their ballots in at least one way. Now, with U.S. elections often decided by much closer margins than 6%, well, that's a lot of people who can potentially be disenfranchised by RCV elections and probably not even know it. In the 2021 Democratic primary for mayor, the rate was almost 4%, while in the 2021 Republican mayoral primary, the rate of ballots that were mismarked was almost 7%. Republicans, I guess, are really bad at understanding ranked choice voting, but I don't blame them. Now, hopefully, none of this comes into play in Tuesday's elections. We'll see. Hopefully, the counting goes smoothly. But given the problems that we've had counting votes in America, as you may have noticed over the years, I think that RCV in general is not just a terrible idea, but a dangerous idea, even if I'm sympathetic, frankly, to the reasons that supporters of RCV, often third parties, tend to like it. I get that. And for that reason, I've always recommended something, because I am nothing if not a compromiser, right, Desi Doyen? So they like RCV. I have concerns about it, but to meet some of those concerns, I've always recommended something called approval voting, which has many of the advantages of RCV elections, but fewer of the dangers. In approval voting, you simply vote yes or no for each of the candidates on the ballot. So you can vote yes for a number of them, no for a number of them. If you don't choose either yes or no, it's basically considered a no. The candidate with the most yes votes wins. So for people who are afraid they're wasting their vote if they vote for a third party, well, you're not wasting your vote. You can vote for both a leading candidate and for a third party. You can give both of them yeses. And if enough people do that, what do you know? The third party candidate may actually win.
Okay, so if I like candidate B and candidate D and candidate F,
yeah,
then I just give them all yeses.
Correct.
If I'm okay with any one of them being
correct.
Mayor of New
that's
York
right.
City,
that's right.
And then they'll get whatever the highest number that person will go through.
That's right. Easy to understand. The candidate with the most yes votes wins. That's it. It's simple for voters to understand. It's easy to count. It doesn't require computers to do the complicated math. It could be tallied by hand publicly. It could be counted at the precincts instead of a centralized location where all the ballots must be tallied together. And for those reasons, I prefer approval voting far and away over RCV, ranked choice voting. But, you know, As I've said, you know, if you think we have problems voting in this country and counting our votes in this country, just add ranked choice voting to our elections and good luck. So approval voting, I think, is at least a simpler way to go. But we'll see. RCV, meanwhile, is what we have in New York City. And tomorrow on the broadcast, maybe we'll have results from Tuesday's mayoral primary in New York City. Maybe. We'll see. But until then, let's take a quick break here. We'll go from local elections in New York City to the national authoritarianism and tyranny of the Trump administration's unspeakably cruel deportation policies, the corruption of the Supreme Court that is now officially enabling those policies, and a heartbreaking story for a family here in the Los Angeles area, tragically caught up in all of it. That's next on today's Busy Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast from Los Angeles. I'm Brad Friedman. This story broke. We didn't get to cover this on Monday. It broke just before we went on air. But the Supreme Court's corrupted right wing issued a wildly corrupt ruling, as I see it, without really one word explaining it, allowing the Trump administration to conduct so-called third country removals, deporting detainees to nations with which they may have no connection whatsoever, and without a due process requirement put in place by a lower court, and I should add, by the U.S. Constitution. The court's three liberal justices strongly dissented in a nearly 20-page dissent that, unlike the Republican appointees, they actually bothered to write and explain their point of view, explain their legal and constitutional disagreement with the right-wingers and the legal reasoning in support of that argument. The rulings suspend a lower court order which mandated a 3-week period in which non-citizens would have to receive notice and an opportunity to challenge their removal to a third country before deportation. Say, for instance, they are concerned they may be tortured in that country, or the country is at war and is listed by the U.S. State Department as a do not travel nation. Like, say, South Sudan, where the Trump administration is currently trying to send a number of migrants who courts would not allow them to send back to their home country for various reasons. So they want to send them to a place they'd never been, South Sudan. The corrupt, unexplained ruling by the High Court on Monday, including three justices that Trump corruptly placed on the court himself, is a big win for the Trump administration's deportation regime, which seeks to speed up removals by sending people to whatever country is willing to take them, regardless of that state's human rights record or ability to ensure the deportee's safety. But perhaps most corruptly and outrageously, as TPM's Josh Kavinsky notes, in handing the White House that win, the Supreme Court is ignoring how far the administration has gone to flout judges' authority in the lower courts, both in this case and in others. In this case, which is called Department of Homeland Security versus DVD, the initials of one of the plaintiffs, the lower court judge issued orders requiring the administration to give detainees 3 weeks, 3 weeks' notice before their removal to third countries. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, however, a completely lawless band of Trump brown shirts continued to try to remove people anyway, in violation, in strict violation of that requirement from that court, from that judge. In one instance, for example, several Venezuelans were sent to the American military base in Guantanamo Bay before then being transferred to El Salvador's maximum security CECOT prison. All of that after the judge had issued an order blocking removals to third countries without the migrants receiving notice. Weeks later, Kavinsky notes, ICE tried to deport a plane load of people to Libya, also without notice. The judge in the DVD case issued a terse note blocking that. Even then, the Trump administration continued. In late May, ICE sent another load of migrants on a plane bound for South Sudan. It stopped at a U.S. military base in Djibouti after the court intervened to say that the move was violating the judge's authority. But ICE declined to bring those people back to the U.S., keeping them instead in a sweltering shipping container on this U.S. base as the legal case plays out, pretending that the judge was forcing them to stay there in Djibouti when, in fact, they could have simply brought them back to the U.S. during that time. But that would have been ceding authority, I guess, to the co-equal judicial branch that the Trump administration is hoping to, and now the Supreme Court is helping them to, steal for themselves that authority that belongs to the judicial branch that they would like to ignore, that they are ignoring, in order to become an entirely dictatorial regime to which the law and the Constitution apparently do not apply. The Supreme Court issued its ruling Monday via the emergency docket, the so-called shadow docket, in which the court doesn't bother to hear oral argument or even bother to explain their rulings if they do not like, if they don't feel like it. And yes, they are ceding that authority to the executive branch. In the dissent to this ruling, joined by Justices Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson, Justice Sonia Sotomayor described the majority's unexplained ruling as a, quote, gross abuse of the court's equitable discretion. She wrote that the government's conduct, quote, resembles that of the arsonist who calls 911 to report firefighters for violating a local noise ordinance. How dare they? She added that the court was rewarding lawlessness in staying the lower court order and noted, among other things, in her fiery, detailed dissent, quote, apparently the court finds the idea that thousands will suffer violence in far-flung locales more palatable than the remote possibility that a district court exceeded its remedial powers when it ordered the government to provide notice and process to which the plaintiffs are constitutionally and statutorily entitled. Perhaps most maddeningly here, in addition to the grave danger that this ruling will, for now, put thousands into, the ruling by the Republicans on the court gave the Trump administration a great big gift by pausing a court order that the administration had already repeatedly defied, violating it over and over again, and I guess receiving no punishment whatsoever for doing so. Lawfare's Quinta Jurassic details the government's, quote, legalistic noncompliance with court orders in this and similar immigration cases, which involves, quote, delaying implementation of court orders, adopting hyper-technical interpretations of judicial rulings in order to engineer loopholes and asserting ignorance and confusion whenever something goes wrong. In DVD, she notes, this case stands out as a chronicle of noncompliance from the very beginning, a cascade of sloppiness and calculated misunderstandings on the government's part that has resulted in potentially serious danger for a gay Guatemalan man removed from the U.S. along with the continued detention of eight men at a U.S. military base in Djibouti. The ruling is, quote, disastrous, according to legal scholar Steve Vladek, who observed, quote, for the court to not only grant emergency relief in this case, but to offer nary a word of explanation, either in criticism of the government's behavior or in defense of why it granted relief, notwithstanding that behavior, is, he says, to invite, if not affirmatively enable, comparable defiance of future district court orders by the government. In other words, the government defied the court, received no punishment for it, and in fact received a reward for it by the Supreme Court, which said nothing about the fact that the Trump administration was violating the law, violating federal judges any way they wanted, and making up any reason for doing so. Yes, we now live in a lawless nation, it seems. And I would add, you can count on the fact that they will defy future district court orders that they do not like. With this ruling, until something changes, with the compliance of the Supreme Court to overlook these flagrant violations of court orders, the law, and the Constitution itself, I think it's fair to say that we are now in the midst of a nearly full-blown autocracy. And I say nearly because there's still a number of things that are standing in the way of a full-blown dictatorship, among them the fact that I and Desi and the rest of the media, well, we are still standing, and we are still here to report all of this to you. When that falls, when that ends, when that ability goes away, well, then we will be in indescribable trouble. Indescribable because I and others in the media will no longer be left here, allowed here to describe it, to tell you about these horrors. But we still are here. And to that end, by the way, now is the time to consider supporting your favorite media outlets, whether it's us or anyone else, with a donation, to someplace like bradblog.com or the station that you may be listening to this show on today, or subscribe to your local newspaper, or whatever your favorite media outlets may be. Now is the time to support them. Not later, when it's too late. We are, I believe, right now, the last defense before the nation falls entirely, and then it will be 100% up to we the people. Good luck to us all. But let's not go down too deep that dark hole for the moment. While we, the media, are still here, let's continue reporting on what we can and what these un-American fascist goons are now doing, including ICE and the DHS, which, by the way, celebrated the Supreme Court's corrupt ruling on Monday by issuing a statement that ended, quote, "Fire up the deportation planes." Really? And who are they deporting? To wherever? On those planes? Well, we live out here in Los Angeles, where masked, violent ICE goons have now become, pretty regular around here. And they've been coming down hard, not on criminals and gang members, but on pretty much anyone who they think they can find who may not be a citizen, who looks like they may not be a citizen. It was just a little too brown for them, I guess. The Home Depot on Sunset Boulevard here in Hollywood, a few blocks away from where we are, that was raided just a few days ago. So it was a car wash near our flagship station, KPFK, here in Glendale. But this story, among many, many like this, really did bother me over the weekend. I had hoped to cover it yesterday, but for Trump's unprovoked, unlawful, unconstitutional bombing of another country because his approval ratings are down, and the military parade that he threw for himself just 1 week earlier was an embarrassing flop. But in a video circulating on social media, as KTLA here in LA reported on Sunday, a group of masked U.S. Border Patrol agents are seen repeatedly punching and striking and subduing a man in Orange County, about an hour or so south of L.A., before forcing him into the back of an unmarked car this past Saturday. The incident sparked protests in the following hours, and an online fundraiser was started through GoFundMe, where family members identified the victim as Tustin, California resident Narciso Barranco, a father to three sons who are all U.S. Marines. According to one of those sons, 25-year-old Alejandro Barranco, Narciso was picked up by alleged because they are masked, they don't wear uniforms that identify them. So alleged federal immigration officers while he was working as a landscaper at the local IHOP on Edinger Avenue and Ritchie Street. He was trimming weeds outside the IHOP when federal goons jumped out of a car, grabbed him, pepper sprayed him, threw him to the ground, repeatedly punched him, as all seen on video that thankfully was taken and went viral. Alejandro, one of his three U.S. Marine sons, described the incident as racial profiling, said he believes, quote, they probably assumed that he was working the landscaping, he had no documentation. The video shows a group of Border Patrol agents wearing face coverings and tactical vests surrounding the landscaper, Narciso, holding him down while one agent repeatedly punches him on his right arm and near his head. Another video later posted to social media shows Narciso moments earlier running a few steps with a weed trimmer, which, according to the Department of Homeland Security, he used to assault the agents, which he didn't. DHS posted a video which shows no assault whatsoever with the weed whacker. It shows a terrified man, not sure what to do or where to go, trying to avoid armed goons for a few seconds, literally 7 seconds, before he was grabbed and thrown to the ground and punched and pepper sprayed. Alejandro says his father has no criminal history, had recently applied to become a U.S. citizen. He was in the process of applying for a program called Parole in Place, which can grant undocumented family members of active military service members permission to stay in the U.S. for a certain period. The younger Barranco told the L.A. Times, in addition to being pepper sprayed and beaten, his father's shoulder was dislocated during the tussle. He said, I don't think they need 4 200-pound-plus guys to hold down a 5'6 or 5'7, 150-pound guy, Alejandro told the paper. The video of the encounter between Barranco and immigration officials has circulated on social media, sparked outrage, creation of that GoFundMe page to help with legal representation. So far, it's generated more than $48,000, at least as of Sunday night. The 48-year-old man, three sons in the U.S. military. 48-year-old man is a hardworking landscaper and a kind person, his son said, quote, if anyone ever needed help, he was always there. He's very well known in the community. On his first call to his son after the detainment, Barranco was less concerned with his injuries and more concerned with his job. He told his son where his truck and equipment were parked and asked him to speak with his client and finish the job, trimming the weeds outside the IHOP. Mm. Alejandro, the son, is a veteran of the U.S. Marines who served in Afghanistan. His two younger brothers, Emmanuel and Jose Luis Barranco, are active duty members. Congressman Lou Correa, who represents Santa Ana, called the case another example of Donald Trump's immigration crackdown, striking fear in Southern California's Latino community. This is just madness, Correa told the Orange County Register. You have a family of three kids that took an oath for the country, ready to lay down their lives for this country, and their parents can't stay here? He told KTLA, quote, we cannot have federal agents inciting violence in our streets and attacking innocent parents. He said in a statement, clearly, we need immigration reform, especially for people like Mr. Barranca, who have lived in this country for 25 to 30 years and raised his sons to put their lives on the line to defend the United States. And I would add, well, thank you, boys, and thank you, Mr. Barranca. Now we need to defend them. Fascism has now arrived, but we are still here to fight back against it. And we will. All of us. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman.
Hey, this is Brad. The Bradcast survives thanks to you and your support. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us continue to do over your public airwaves what we try to do 5 days a week. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thank you.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Speaking of fascism, hating Americans, hating American values and all of that, as you were talking, we in our Green News Report, we'll get to it in one moment. We talk about the heat dome now over the center of the U.S., but you mentioned, what was it you were telling me?
Yes, so there are studies that are gathered at climate.gov, the federal government site where, you know, you can collect all, you can find all the different studies.
Yeah.
And that site has now been taken down by the Trump administration because obviously they don't want taxpayers to access the science that they paid for. So that's gone now.
The place that you would normally go to get information to carry on the GNR.
Yes.
Gone.
Right.
There you go. Let's
Trump's
get to
America.
It. Yep. Let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Some 200 million Americans could face dangerous and life-threatening conditions.
Summer heat dome broils most of the U.S. Climate change will hammer the food supply, new study warns. Plus,
the math is unforgiving.
The window for limiting warming below 1.5 degrees Celsius is closing.
All of that unforgiving math and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Yes, it was said this week that ICE agents were rounding up migrants picking fruit in Fresno, but foreign invaders can't just waltz into this country and steal the American dream of backbreaking manual labor in Fresno, where it's going to be 102 next week. So, hey, American kids who just got a marketing degree from Penn State, good news. There's opening now in the exciting field of field work.
Hey, that's great news. Come on out, MAGA. Don't forget your real ID. You're going to need it after you pass out, and they need to identify you in the hospital. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a monster heat wave looks like it's set for much of the country over the next week or so. So welcome to summer.
Yes, indeed. Buckle up. A heat dome is stalled over the U.S., bringing extreme searing heat and unusually high tropical levels of stifling humidity to more than 200 million Americans across the U.S., with temperatures pushing 100 degrees or higher, stressing the nation's electric grid, and with little relief for people to cool off at night, compounding the danger. Extreme heat is the deadliest form of extreme weather in the United States. It's particularly dangerous for low-income households that can't afford to run air conditioners, even as the Trump administration has dismantled life-saving assistance programs that help them pay their energy bills. Mm. And yes, it is man-made climate change driven by the burning of fossil fuels. Studies show that man-made global warming has made heat waves hotter, larger, longer, and more frequent. And heat domes used to be rare, but they now occur three times more frequently than in the 1960s.
Cool. Something to think about over the next week while you're sweltering inside.
The extreme heat is even disrupting Major League Baseball games. Over the weekend, players for the Cincinnati Reds and Seattle Mariners required emergency medical treatment on the field as temperatures hit 95 degrees.
Really?
In science, a new study warns that humanity's greenhouse gas emissions are accelerating and on track to hit a key threshold within the next 3 years. The report projects that by 2028, society will have emitted enough greenhouse gases from the burning of oil, gas, and coal to have a greater than 50-50 chance that the world will be locked in and committed to 1.5 degrees Celsius of long-term warming over pre-industrial levels. 1.5 is the internationally agreed-upon limit in the Paris Climate Agreement.
Hey, it's a 50-50 chance. Maybe it won't happen.
Yes, but it is not likely. Overshooting means even more frequent and intense extreme heat waves, droughts, wildfires, and storms. But every fraction of a degree of warming we can avoid will make a big difference, says study co-author Dr. Michael Mann in an interview with the BBC.
So at this point, the challenge is to reduce carbon emissions as quickly as we can to avert ever worse impacts, like the ones we're seeing play out this summer in real time in Europe, in the UK, and here in the United States.
Yes.
We are moving away from fossil fuels, but we're not doing so fast enough to avert some of these very dangerous potential thresholds.
In other news, a sweeping new analysis published in the journal Nature projects that rising global temperatures will hammer food crops across the world, including alarming impacts in the United States. The researchers warn that warming will cut yields of key crops like rice, wheat, soy, and corn in half by the end of this century. The lead researcher warned, quote, if the climate warms by 3 degrees, that's basically like everyone on the planet giving up breakfast. Mm. The world is currently on track for around 3 degrees Celsius of warming by the end of this century.
Yikes.
In other news, the Trump administration's bombing of 3 nuclear sites in Iran has not released any radiation outside those facilities, according to the chief of the International Atomic Energy Agency, who said that even if missile strikes should hit nuclear materials, he believes it would be unlikely to cause widespread radiation or a large-scale nuclear disaster.
I can't believe that's the best news we've had on this report so far.
Well, finally, a bit of better news.
We'll see.
In that massive power outage across Spain and Portugal in April, the nation's grid operator issued a report saying that renewables did not cause the blackout, contrary to right-wing media claims. It was caused by old grid equipment failures and poor planning for the spike in demand.
There you go. Some good news that no one other than GNR listeners will likely ever hear about.
True.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen.
Yes, stay cool out there. Be careful out there. Check in on vulnerable people and leave some water out for wild animals if you can. It's hot out there.
It is hot out there, and we got to help each other because Lord knows if there'll be a government, a federal government anyway, that has any interest in helping us. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your hot day or night with us. It is always greatly appreciated, and it is an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com or your favorite podcast sites. But over at bradblog.com, you can hit a donate button to help us stay on your public airwaves just as long as we possibly can. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias at The Brad Blog and Desi Doyen
at Green News Report,
especially on Blue Sky. We'll see you there at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.